5 minutes.
Lovely.
We're okay to start?
We are good to go.
Good. Okay, so we'll start the meeting. I'm John Lindman. I'm from Hidden Springs area, co-chair.
Vicky Handy from Willamette area, co-chair.
It actually goes over to, yep.
Todd Olson, Parks and Rec Board member.
Tyler Herman, staff.
Megan Big John, staff. Chris?
And Chris Owens, Robinwood Board member.
Stacy? Oh, you're muted.
Got it. Turn off the mute.
Stacy Epstein, Parks and Rec Board.
Awesome, thanks.
So hopefully everybody has tonight's agenda. Do we want to change anything here? Talk about doing that?
I would like to propose a change to the agenda for item number 4, the Parks and Rec Advisory Board 2025 Year in Review. Given the deliverable we created at our last meeting and next meeting being the board, the council report that we have to fill out, I think that this would be redundant. And so I would like to propose that we strike item 4 from the agenda and focus on getting that all done at our next meeting.
I second that.
Awesome. Everybody in support?
Aye.
Thank you.
Aye.
Good. Cool. All right, we got summary notes from last time we were here.
I'll make a motion to accept last month's summary notes.
I second that motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Good.
Chris and Stacy, if you can't hear us by chance, please don't hesitate to speak up. It's, the mics are new for everybody, so we have to talk into them. So just give us a heads up, okay?
Will do. So far, the audio is actually better than the meeting room, the council or conference room that we normally use. So this is good.
Perfect. Okay, good. Thank you.
Looks like it should be more expensive.
So can we move to community comments? I believe we have a visitor with us tonight.
Community comments.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Randall Baskerman, and I'm with Friends of Robinwood Station. One of the founders and manager, custodian, lawnmower.
Okay, and Randall, I'm sorry, what was your last name again?
Fastabend. That's F-A-S-T-A-B-E-N-D.
Wonderful. Our protocol is 3 minutes for community comments. What would you like to share with us tonight?
Just wanted to let you know that since our inception in 2010, we've been a nonprofit in West Lynn. And I've been managing Robinwood Station. We closed in 2022 for our renovation, opened in 2023. And I'm here to share with you a usage report from 2024 and 2025. I did not include 2020 to 2023 because of pandemic. We had some closures there and our usage was way down. But I wanted to share with you this, I know it's a paper, sorry for the folks at home.
Do you have a copy? Awesome.
Sorry, I didn't bring it.
Oh, you're fine.
Wanted to share this.
Thank you.
Report with you to let you know what we've been up to.
Thank you.
I have asked Mayor Bialystowski for a joint meeting with council sometime in the near future so we could share with them what we've been doing and share with them our aspirations for the space. The history of that space is built by the neighbors of Robinwood, before Robinwood became part of us. And it was served de facto as a city hall for the little community of Robinwood. Once Robinwood became part of West Lynn, the building became city hall and has been since. We manage it as a facility, as a community center, with time to get a community garden in the backyards. So I bear your attention to 2024, which is the blue line. And it's roughly, well, it is exactly 1,800 46 hours worth of programs you have in Robinwood Station, which equates to about roughly five hours a day, every day, there's something. That was in 2024. In 2025, we increased by 42%. We're now at 2,633 hours are being planned for this year. And that's actually gone up because we've gotten some bookings since that. So I'll have to change that. But it's a variety of things have been going on at the station. Both long-term renters, people who are using it on a regular basis, and people who are just using it for once. One-time users are usually on weekends and they're using parties for meetings of civic nature or education. Monday through Friday, we have two music teachers and also Leg Snacks, which is a disabled group that cooks dog biscuits in the kitchen. Since the kitchen has a nearly commercial kitchen and it has three ovens, it's ideal for their business.
Can I pause just for a second? I just want the board to know we're past the 3 minutes, so for you to make the decision. No, I just want to make sure. Just so you know, do not want to interrupt it.
Lots of things are going on there. Questions from the end?
Well, we have the option to extend, especially since we have such a crowd here tonight.
You guys do.
And also to ask questions. If it's all right with you, Chair, Co-Chair, I'd like to hear just a little bit more. I think this is a real important opportunity and I think it's worth our time.
Keep going, yeah.
Thank you.
Currently, we have a board of 14. Their members are, we have one member who lives in Portland. So we don't confine our board to Jeff West Lynn. We confine our board to the state of Oregon, basically. And one of our members is one of the music teachers he teaches Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday afternoons. Some of you might know his name is Charlie McGee, and he used to teach at CRO as a music teacher there. So he's on our board, but the rest of the members, probably half of them are in the Broadwood area and the other half are Springfield deposits. And we currently pay all the utilities, and we have insurances that are run close to $3,000 a year. And we have some operating costs that we cover. All rents that we get for the building go into an account. We have no employees. We're all volunteers. And all the money is saved and utilized for the building. Most of the transactions that we do are via email. One of our board members worked for Google and is very adept at things online and a volunteer to do the whole booking online, her name is Emily. And I still do the phone calls that come in, and occasionally somebody will give us a physical piece of paper that actually has it written. And I'll get that too. But Emily's been great. Our new board members, which we doubled our board size last year, they're wonderful people. We have kind of a changeover. I don't know if you noticed in the neighborhood, Megan, because I know you
heard of it.
There's a lot of families moving in. A lot of people are selling their homes and families and moving in. And we were fortunate enough to pick up about four or five members of those younger members of the families who are now on board. And it was by design that we, most of our board is senior citizens, and then when we went forward, we wanted some younger folks on the board. And I just need to tell you about, you know, the Friends of the Plain House, that you know what happens to if your board ages out.
Yep.
So it was very purposeful that we sought and got people on our board who were younger. And curious enough, what comes with that is energy and know-how. You do not know how, and it's been, right? Peter, who also teaches 3 or 4 days a week at State, is our secretary. And he lives in the neighborhood. And he's a prime example of that. He brings in his information, his younger energy and zeal, and it's been awesome to have somebody with his skill set as our secretary. Some of the events that we sponsor as a group, the Friends of Rockland State, is we do about 6 blood drives every year. We do 2 air fairs every year. We have an open mic night every month, which is a really neat event. It's free to the public, and anybody can come at 6:30 and sign up to perform. And it's performed, meaning it's not just music. I've seen 9-year-olds doing stand-up comedy, and it's fun there. Some of the best entertainment I've seen. So open mic night once a month. We have once a month a music improv session, which is, it's a play session. It's free to the public. It has musicians play and people improv to the music. And it's, I have not been in one of their sessions yet, but I'm hearing really good things. And finally, we have the Rottenwood Garden, which is in the background. It's a fabulous garden, and it's on somewhat of a surface construct in that you don't get your own spot. You come to the garden, and the garden coordinator that they all elect has a list of things that they're going to do, and they do all the things together. And they have found over the years that the Rottenwood Garden has been in, they're in the starting in 14th year. They get a lot more food when they work together and they tend in lots together. And they're currently in a phase where they're replacing all of the beds with metal, new professional metal beds. Rottenwood Garden is a self-sustaining garden. Every spring it has a garden sale. And they earn about $2,000 to $3,000 from that sale that we do. And that money goes back into the garden, and apparently it's buying new apartments and so on. So that's kind of a brief picture of what's going on at Rockland Station. Some of our aspirations are that we would like to become a full service center and put in an emergency generator. And we have sussed out and found 4 contractors. And it checked in with Jeremiah Kirk, and the 4 contractors have all worked with the city. So what we propose to do is to have those providers give us a bid. The city can then look at those bids and decide which one it is that is best for the building. And then the Friends of Rockland Station can pay for that with the installation of that emergency generator. Current prices are anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000, and we're prepared to pay. Another aspiration is to solarize the building, put solar panels on the roof, and at this time, I think there would need to be some co-work with the city on looking for sources for solar panels, as public buildings have a lot more, well, not only strength attack, but also opportunities for solar panels. And if we want to work in the city to get this solar panel. Yeah.
May I ask a question? And maybe this is for Megan. Could you remind me of the governance model for Rottenwood Station?
Yeah.
Because it is city building.
Yeah.
And so what entity provides oversight?
Yes.
The city. Is it Parks and Rec?
So it is a Parks and Recreation facility. The Friends of Rottenwood are a lessee. So any like large plans, like when the generator, which has been a dream forever, I know, we would expect to receive a proposal for what that is, to figure out what the actual plan is, so we understand what the impacts are to the site, what's allowable, what's legal, what permits need to be go into, and then we would go into that process with, and then for funding, and then not have to get approved for that use. Solar panels would be something as well. That's a little bit larger ask, which would go in aspirational, and I love it. But we'd have to figure out, because they are a renter of the building, you know, essentially they're leasing. So that's part of that piece of figuring out how we move forward with it. But yeah, I love the dreaming of it too.
And so I am so appreciating this information. I know I've wanted to hear this for a while. And so this is wonderful. And I really appreciate you explaining your programming mix. If we are the body that has some oversight, I think that it would be appropriate to maybe look at a P&L. And also just if you could, here's the revenue coming in, profit loss statement.
Gotcha, thank you.
Profit liability is just, here's the stuff coming in and here's where the money's going.
Mm-hmm.
Just if this is the governance point, we should probably see something like that. And so that's one. The second question I have is the process for renting Robin Wood, is that open to anybody in the community?
Anybody in the world, really. We rented out people outside of West End, however, the pricing structure doubles outside of West End.
Okay.
Citizens, when our pricing structure is based upon the city's pricing structure, the person in, but however, we do make some allowances for Scout groups, youth groups. We discount for that.
Okay.
To encourage them in this space.
Mm-hmm.
So, and currently, we're like, well, let's say, of all these hours, the 2,600 hours that we've been renting for this year, probably about 3/4 of that is actually has some price upon it. That's median.
So those were my two questions. What's governance? If it is parks, then it would be appropriate to ask for a P&L statement. And
technically it's facilities. I was just trying to think of that. It's technically facilities, but they fall under parks.
You, it all comes under.
And press the button. Sorry, Chris, I will repeat that because I turned my button off. It's actually facilities, and facilities is separate, but it's under my purview. So it's yes. And it's a recreational programming that's provided too. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
We're no longer Parks and Rec. We're Megan's. And I love your ideas, and I'm like Megan, I love your framing of it as your aspirational, aspirational ideas. Does the Parks and Rec board have any questions? I think this is a great opportunity to gain insight on something that we've had questions about. And I just wanted to open this up to the larger advisory board. Do you have any questions, or would you like to make a request for any additional information? Chris? No, yep. Stacy?
Good, thanks.
Chair Randall, thank you so much for coming tonight and sharing the information. This is really valuable. Just a quick question. How do most people hear about the Robin Wood Station such that they come and want to use it? Or is it through
it's the been a lot,
website? Is it word of mouth around the
local? A lot of it is word of mouth.
Okay.
A lot of it, because we've been there now since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been, there's a handful of us who are the founding members of it. I'm still on the board. I was president of the board until a couple of years ago when I stepped down and Kevin took over as the president of the board. I'm still, I retain the position of manager and toilet cleaner and lawnmower and
somebody's got to do
leaf blower. So I was there today. We're laying pavers, by the way. We're putting pavers around the side of the building to where the garbage cans are, because it's always been gravel and it's been difficult to get the toters through that gravel. And then the gravel has been going across the parking pad too. So So today we started putting in pavers, and I'm sorry I didn't let you know that beforehand, but Jeremiah knew about it because I told him.
Yeah, he asked me today if those papers were available, and so I said yes.
Yeah, okay, well, we've got different pavers, though. Yeah, we've got the same kind of pavers that are on the west side of the facility, so they would match.
That's good.
At a later date, though, we may ask you for those pavers because there's lots of places in the back that where we need some footing because it gets pretty damp and gushy mud.
Definitely gushy is a good word there.
I'm sorry, John, we kind of passed you. Did you have any questions or?
All right, well,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randall.
And clearly your volunteerism is making that place shine in more ways than one.
Well, go to robinwoodstation.org and look at our calendar just to see what's going on.
That's pretty cool.
There's a lot of things. When I say 2,600 hours this year, it basically comes out to 7.2 hours a day. Every day is what our average. Of course, it's not like that because there's doubling up of things too, but we're getting busy.
Thank you so much for your time tonight, Randall, and the expanded.
I would stay, but I've got to go to choir practice now.
Thanks, Randall.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Board, thank you for indulging a little extra time for that and additional questions.
Good.
I know this was an area personally I had a lot of interest, so.
And one thing, I just wanted to make sure that the board knew that we were keeping consistent with the 3 minutes and then let you guys decide what to do for everybody.
Our next item is city data update.
City data, actually. You know what I'll have to do, though? I might have to have you click back there, Tyler, because I didn't think about that part of it.
Yeah, I can do it. City data first.
Yes, city data, please. It's not exactly that way because it's not a slideshow. So you'll have to bear with us in our new tech and learning how I'm doing this. So I wanted to share with you some information as Tyler gets the screen pulled up. So it's taken us a few months, mostly because of myself and not, can't even really say Tara, but trying to get them the right information to be able to upload to get our city data. Tyler, could you maybe slide that down? Hey, Chris and Stacy, we're going to shrink you down. So please just pop in with a question if you need to, so we can see the board, okay? This has been a fun adventure, and I really had hoped to have it done sooner, but the neat part about it is that the data is collected whether we're able to show you something or not. We have signed a yearly contract for them for 15 locations. Right now we have 14 that are showing. I'm actually going to be discussing putting the adult community center on there so that we can actually see the use of inside that footprint on a daily basis and on an annual basis. Tyler, can you slide the screen up?
The screen?
Yeah, actually, let me do this real quick. I'm going to go and drive for 1 second.
Yeah.
Okay. I realized this was not the best thought at my mind. I am going to scroll this up here. I'm going to slide her up there for the moment. And what I need to do is switch this to the year. And then look at 24 only. And then there are places. These are the tabs. Okay. We'll just look at the main screen for right now, but I wanted to show everybody that you can see. Let me get to the mic. To see all of the locations that we have currently. I'm trying to remember of what I showed you before, and I want to let you know some of the thinking. If we went up past 15 or the cost got really expensive, this is about $400 a month that we pay, and we get 2 years of data. So we get this year's 2024 and 2025 as we go through. The reason why you'll see some specifics with like Bernard Landing at Willamette Park. So when you look at Willamette, technically you need to add the Bernard Landing to that number. But the reason why I kept those separate is we have reporting we have to do for the Marine Board, as well as grant opportunities. It's funded separately than the park property. So that is why that is separate.
Would that mean that it's 80,000 plus?
Yeah, it would be
81.
in theory, right, the thing you have to think about is the same person could be going from Burnett Landing into the park. So you have to remember they're a little bit, their numbers are as accurate as what they can be for that crossover, right? So when you look at that, I'm trying to keep them separate, but in theory, most people who come to the boat launch are coming specifically for the boat launch, right? The areas of that are sidelined is when you're walking down Volp Street, right? So we have that area where that's where we start to refine over time. We actually maybe eliminate Volp Street as a location so that you just change those shape files so that you're shrunk into. That's some of the vetting that we're working through. We had a same issue. We had a Merrillhurst Heights had a ton. It was double that amount of people that were coming into that for the year. Look at the numbers, really high, right? You think of all the people who might be walking through there. So we did find that we had a cell tower in that area that was throwing off some of the numbers. And so that's been refined and there will still be continued refinement. The part is also when we're looking at Mary S. Young to find out how that park is being used. We're able to use this data to look to see how regionally far people are coming. I think I maybe showed that the last time. It is mostly in Clackamas County. I mean, there are people that come from elsewhere here, but it was primarily Clackamas County where I was wondering how much of a regional park that was. Just trying to think here. If you were to go, Tyler, can you go to Mary S. Young, for example?
That's Mary S.
Young? Yeah, so just click, yep, only. There you go. Perfect. Thank you. And if you can scroll into Mary S. Young over there.
Hey, Megan, real quick, you may have said this and I may have missed it, but how do they count the visitors and the, and is that
a great question? Fair? I have a whole document on that because I'm going to give you my really silly or my, not silly, my limited version of what it is. So they are using apps that are on people's cell phones. And those are permissions that are given. So there's no tracking of, you don't see Megan Big John's phone walking through the park. It's based on that data that's collected nationally, globally already with those permissions. And so there is a full security piece of that. Went through, talked with our police department on it too. Full security piece of that. I also asked the question of a lot of people who live here have cell phone numbers from other states. And I was like, is that going to be like messing with the data? And no, it goes down to the area that you're in is where you reside. And I don't know how that technology works. I have a 3-page document that shares that information. But you have to think about it. It still is an average, right, of a number, because say you have a family of four coming in and two have cell phones and two don't. They have that kind of analytics. And I thought about bringing them to a meeting just to be able to ask those questions when we go to council too, just to be able to explain that technology that goes into it. It's neat that there's other, Lake Oswego's, I guess, is just getting signed up, City of Wilsonville, City of Tualatin, and they've been presenting at our Oregon Recreation Parks Association, and there's gonna be more that are gonna be joining in because of the affordability of it and what it shows you for grants, and not just only our use. The part that's really neat about this is I wish I had to be able to move it. Tyler, can you go to heat maps?
Heat maps.
Mm-hmm. Now, right now, a thing that looks strange here when you're looking at this screen. Tyler, can you scroll up just a little bit more? So see where it says year, and then next to it says January 2023 to January 2025 or September 2025. That is actually not what's being shown. This is the full year of 2024. That is an update that they're getting ready to fix for me. But the data is, as Tyler scrolls down, you can start to see where the main active use is in the park. And when you look at it, once we start to hone in on our data and be able to get it a little bit more refined, I think I've mentioned before, so I apologize if I'm repeating, but not only are you looking at your hotspots of where you have active activity, but you're also looking at where your maybe maintenance areas need to be refined, especially when we start looking at splash pads, when you have 5 in a day and we're all trying to get them started by 10 o'clock in the morning. If there's an area that has very little use in the morning, we may be able to, especially for the cost of maintaining those, maybe we don't open a splash pad until noon at that location. So that information, you're also able to use it for your mowing cycles, because you can hone into the month where this is just an annual year.
Megan?
Yeah.
Good question. Can you get this like by hour, by day, to kind of like to your point of,
yeah,
kids may be using a splash pad. I'm thinking of, say, restroom maintenance, right?
100%. Yes.
So it's exactly. Like 1 o'clock, someone needs to get over.
Yeah. There. So to my understanding, depending on heat maps, we can't get that granular. We can get into a month timeframe. We are able to get into the days and the hour frequency. And once we get out of heat maps, let me show you that part of it, because that was what originally I was thinking it would do. But we can actually start to see use by hour. So Tyler, if you can do me a favor and go back to places. And click on Willamette for me, if you could. And if you can click then on to the numbers that Willamette, I think, can you scroll down the bottom of the screen?
Yeah.
Too, when you get a chance after you start scrolling around. Yeah, thank you. And this is, like I said, harder for me that I'm not, and Tyler's awesome.
Right here.
Yeah. Perfect. So there's some visitation counts that you can see by the month. And I believe, Tyler, if you can do me a favor and click on like one of the tall ones, the yellow ones are actually events. So we can see July 14th, which would be fair, that we had 3,000 people. Now we know we had more than that in some ways, right? Like trying to figure out how is that, but, or is it when we compare to the last, that was last year, we changed things. So say I'm making this up. I don't know if that's Sunday. But Sunday, we changed our programming. We were struggling to get people to come on Sunday. And so on Saturday, we had the parade that's put on by, you know, Old Town. And then we had the car show. And then we had all of our concert series. We were having a parking issue. And so this year, we switched to the car show to Sunday. So it spread out. That also allowed us to do overflow parking in that field on Saturday. And now we'll get to compare those numbers to see what they are. And see if we had, did we lose any customer? Do we lose anybody coming? Do we spread it out over the 3 days? It's gonna be really interesting to see. So we currently, they are just right now this month uploading all of our 2025 data. And so, for example, it'll be great to see what our numbers were at Fall Fest last year as versus what they were this year. And then it'll be interesting to see what if next year, what if it pours down rain and what our numbers are like then. And so we're able to get some of that information. I'm trying to remember where we click on the graph where you can actually see the day of the hour. Yeah.
Land park usage is, I mean, if I was looking at this, the distribution is surprisingly steady throughout the year. Story that this is telling us.
Well, and that's where we're going to be looking at, especially with our waterfront property use, like the use of not just only we have, you know, softball uses it during the summertime. We have it there for camps for, you know, so we'd be able to look at those average amount of days. But then you think of the water traffic that it attracts, and if
right.
we start looking to move forward, if we move forward on the non-motorized boat launch, it's only going to increase it at that point too. So you start being able to look at your parking, you know, if you add any more programming, what does it do? And how the boat launch is being used and how we get funding for that too. So it's quite interesting. There's more, I want to get this a little refined and I'll be able to send it out. I don't know that we'll ever make it fully public facing because there's a couple things. If you click two things at the same time, then you get your data is not correct. And so that's a part that I'm trying to figure out, but I think it'd be fun for you guys to be able to click through City Council, of course, and to be able to see what the data is showing. It's a lot. I mean, I could spend a couple hours with you clicking on this and maybe we'll do another time, but I wanted just to show you that we're getting headway and these numbers, like right now I'm getting ready to be applying for grants coming up, and this data is going to be integral in that because I have other no ways to be able to show who's coming, where they're coming from, who it's primarily serving. And it's still in the caveat, it's data coming from, you know, apps used on a cell phone. So it's not, you know, it's not 100% correct, but when we have no means of gathering data, this is really helpful. Yeah, right.
You have to be using an app on your cell phone to be counted.
No, you don't. So like,
have your cell phone on.
Yeah, you just have to have a cell phone, right? You know, so yeah, your cell phone would be on if it was off. I'm guessing this is not, I'm not 100% correct, but
everybody doesn't carry a cell phone. It's totally turned up.
No, no, exactly. And so that's where, you know, not everybody has a cell phone, especially certain age groups, right? You know, they're not going to have that. And so it does have this, and there's a, they have a way of figuring out that calculation that I wish I could just be so smart to tell you exactly how it is. But the part that I'm really proud of is that there's a lot of agencies that were already using it before us. And so it's been really tested, and obviously they're nationwide and global. So, and they have modules that help with transportation. They have the other ones for different types of planning and for engineering. So it's kind of neat. We're just focusing on this, but it's another opportunity for other departments to join in to get those modules over time, so.
Being a data junkie, I personally love this. I would love to do a little bit of analysis work with it.
Yeah.
You know, identify some findings that we use in our decision-making and recommendations.
And that's what I'll be doing too, you know?
I am your partner in arms in that, if you are willing. I'm very excited by this.
Well, and I have a slide deck too, and I have their, you know, their, you know, kind of two-pager on how their tech is, and I'm happy to share that too, so you can kind of read into it on your own. But I think it really gives us a lot of information, and it looks to, like, when we're starting to look at doing, if we want to do more outdoor recreation programming, you know, at shelters, like, what is our current, we obviously know the use from our reservations, but what is it in the off-season? There's also some of the things that have some discrepancies, though, is like, we found actually it was at Tanner, for example, there was this really gigantic red hotspot that was right next to the property line. And we're like, is there any illegal, not just a camp, but is it a hangout for kids? Like, what is there? We found out that the homeowner, they have a very large backyard patio that they must work home remotely often. So we just pared back our matrix of that, or our shape of that file to like take that out. We went and looked at it, but it gave us a chance to pause to go, what is going on in that hotspot? Why is it there? So, you know, there's things that you have to modify and tweak over time. Do you see, we had that over at Merrillhurst too. One side of the property was really high. It was right over a hedge. And we were like, what is going on here? So we paired it in, but we don't know, are people working from home? You know, it's still, it's using satellite data from apps. It's not going to be perfect. But when you have no means of gathering information, you know, it's probably on the low end of numbers as opposed to the high end of numbers. So, but I'll be happy to share the information with you just because it's fun to look around at and to see what's going on with it. And we still are finding things that need to be refined. So, yeah.
Very cool.
So I can't wait to share it with you to be able to, like, you start clicking and give some of the caveats. But it's pretty neat when you start to look about how many people we serve. And this is only 15 of our parks. Well, 14 right now. We were trying to figure out what other one would be, like Wilderness Park was another one that we were very curious about trying to figure out. But right now with the ACC, the Adult Community Center, I'm wanting to be able to find some way to get sponsorship to help cover some of our costs there and to be able to look for other grants to help the programming. So that's why I think I'm going to go that direction and not do the parking lot, because you know all the middle school parents park there to pick up. It's just the actual footprint of the building.
So smart.
Yeah. So anyway, okay. So Stacy or Chris, do you guys have any questions online?
No, that's interesting. Interesting part that you're following my phone wherever I go. But other than that, I think it's great.
Luckily, there's others that already are, so it's not us. We're just being
I think the data is extremely interesting. It can be mined pretty deeply.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And I'll probably need to make kind of a one sheet on areas to click on, because what you can find, because when you click on to Tyler, if you click on to visits, that highlighted down in the bottom. Oh, no, there. No, that's good. That's good. There you go. See, now you can start to see some of the trends and the length of time and the distance traveled.
Okay. And this is just
Willamette. This is just Willamette Park.
Oh, this is great.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what's down lower, Tyler. If there's you, I know it's so hard. When you see this, that bar is really big up top.
I must have missed something in that. How do you know the distance traveled?
Based on where the cell phone origin is, like where they live. So you can see where in the region they're coming from.
But, okay.
There's, Stacy, I'll be honest with you. It's really fantastic. That I can't depict very well, but I will send the information over. But the one thing that's important, it's not tracking your phone number or you as a person. It's the app that's actually that you're connected to, that they, the apps, like it could be any one of your apps, like, right. They have the permission to use that information, and it has to meet legal requirements that are managed by the United States. That's the only part, but it does seem a little bit mysterious in one way that the technology, I need to have my 13-year-old in here who might be able to explain it better.
I was just thinking if I live in Salem, but I come up and I stay here for a day or two, and I'm two blocks from Marius Young, does it count the distance from being in West Lynn or all the way from Salem?
Yeah, it would be, my understanding would be that since your origin, like where you stay, where you live is Salem, it would calculate the distance when you go to Marius Young Park for whatever time you're there. That's how they track from other states and from other parts of the world too.
I see. Okay.
But if you ask how that occurs, I cannot tell you that.
Okay.
I'm really encouraged that the majority are all within 10 miles.
I was surprised.
Which tells us that it really is being used by West Lynn residents.
Absolutely. Well, in Clackamas County, if you think about it, because 10 miles from that point, that's Oregon City. I mean, Canby is maybe a little bit of a shot, but if you consider that compass around, it's a lot of West Lynn. And then I was like, it's not regionally. And I would have assumed that Burnett Landing would have been, you know, very, I mean, people do come from distances, but it tells you also how many boat launches there are in the area. And what's very different from I was going to say the obvious, but you don't really think about it, is Willamette is above the falls and Cedar Oak is below, right? So very different means of where you're going and what you're trying to travel and even what you're trying to catch, you know? So it's kind of interesting to have the two on the upper and lower. So yeah, we're getting there, right? And there's still going to be some tweaking, right? They're still doing, like, for example, we thought that the Tanner Creek at our concerts, the numbers seemed a little low. Because I started taking photos, Tyler takes a ton of photos, but I have a photo from one of our concerts. I picked the date of what it was, and I'm at the actual stage looking back at the crowd. They can take that information and get a little bit more honed in on the number of people that are there, and that is using AI data, but that's information they can take and then fine tune in our attendance at that point too. So it's kind of neat. So especially, I always tell people, for those who are small agencies and wear a lot of hats, you have to tap into that service when you just don't have a means of clicking, or, you know, we do have the Arts and Culture Commission though, that is counting the amount of kids that are coming to their booth to do activities, which is awesome. Because we, as our staff, we can't do that at our booth, but they're doing that. So we're still gathering data from that enrichment right there. So it's pretty neat. So yes, I'm all about data too. I think it's really important and it helps you make some decisions, knowing what it's limited, but still what it provides. But when we're looking at applying for grants or being able to share our story for sponsorships, why should I help sponsor the concert series? This information is really important and valuable. So, yeah. Okay, do you have any more questions or want to have Tyler click on any other buttons?
That's really good. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad. That makes me happy. So more to come, but I will definitely share more information. Make a note too.
Okay. So you want to talk to us about heritage trees?
Yes. Tyler, would you mind pulling up when you get a chance the presentation? Good note to myself. So through the review of the tree code and the change in with heritage trees, we also just wanted to landmark a new heritage tree designation. We have an application that was been sitting there for quite some time. It was essentially started with Ron Jones, who was our previous city arborist. I don't know if you know, he passed away this year. Yeah. And so very sad. He and his wife Shirley were longtime volunteers at the Environmental Community Center as well. Yeah. So it was definitely a hard year, and I feel so privileged that I got to be able to know him and work with him for the short time we did before he retired. I'm also excited that he retired and he and Shirley had some good adventures, but they were still there frequently at the Adult Community Center. So what kind of spurred this nomination on was not only that we did the tree code update, wanted to be able to have something to showcase, but this was a tree that he wanted to be able to nominate. So our Parks and Recreation Department is nominating it now. I wanted to go through, I have a slide deck that's a little bit, it's a lot wordy, but it's because I need to take it to council eventually, so I won't spare you through all of it, but we'll click through it, and I'll just want to read some of the information that we're going to go through. Do you want me to click it, or are you going to click it? Oh, thank you so much. Okay. So since 1993, we've had a heritage tree program. And we are deeply connected to nature in West Lynn, as we know. We're the land of hills, trees, and water. And this designation program over the time has had 10 designations at this moment. Up to before the code was adopted just recently and changed, when you designated a tree at your house, the tree would be deeded to the city and all of the maintenance would be managed by the city. So these 10 trees currently here, one is actually on a parks property, are currently deeded to the city at this point in time and are to be maintained with those 10 trees. The part that's neat and we're hoping to expand is, like it says up there, is each heritage tree tells a story of what it is and its significance. And right now we don't have a real fleshed out website or information about each tree. And that's what I'm hoping to work on for the next year, to really have kind of a story map of what each tree is, its history, so that we can share that for our Tree City information as well as Arbor Month. So here are the trees that we have so far in their locations. We did just get them uploaded on the city maps and we'll be creating a map to go along with it. So what is a heritage tree? It is listed in the code. It's a tree that this council designates, and it has, based on its size, its location, condition, and historical significance. Anybody can nominate a tree, but you do have to have the signing permission of the owner if it is not your tree, which that has happened, right? It could be like, I want to designate Vicky's tree. And at the time she may not want to, but if she does, then it can be co-signed by her for that permission. And then the applications are accepted year round. The council will be presented to them as they come, but what we've chosen to do is in Arbor Month, we'll do a celebration for those new nominations at the tree to have a little celebration to honor it. And the trees in the picture are previous heritage, or the current heritage trees, just so you know. So there's an evaluation scoring that goes into it. So when you fill out your application, you fill out the information that you know, and most important is the historical knowledge that you do have of it, your estimated of size and of the condition of it. But we do have an ISA certified arborist who goes out, who will go out. We're kind of setting these protocols now. They weren't really in place before, but this was the criteria that's listed within the code for the scoring. And so the certified arborist goes out. So right now we had Mike Perkins, who is our city arborist, to go do this evaluation today, to do the scoring for us. And I like that there is a matrix so that there's only one that's a little bit has some variability in it, is the historical significance. And over time, we'd like to be able to clarify how you do that scoring so that any of our city arborists can do that as well. But to be able to be referred to for or recommended for a heritage tree, you need to receive 180 points out of this scoring. So the process for having a tree in the program is that you fill out the application and it's reviewed by the arborist. We have added in that we'd like to have PRAB be as our tree board to be able to have a recommendation to council based on what you see. And then it will go to council for a presentation for their designation. And then we'd have that heritage tree ceremony in April during tree month, or during arborist. Oh my gosh, I just went blank on what it, arborist month. Yes. Yeah. So once the tree is designated, and this is a change. So we're going to have two sets of trees. Right now, when a tree is designated, now the tree will still be deeded. If there's a tree that comes after that code, and say this tree that we're looking at today was on private property, it would be deeded to that property, not deeded to the city. So, but the city will manage all that deeding property. It's very common with most cities. And the homeowner is now in charge of doing the ongoing maintenance of it. The city just doesn't have the capacity to be able to take on new trees. And we were wondering if that's partly why we were not getting some designation, because of that deeding. And also kind of hoping that we'll be able to spur on to encourage more people to have these trees in here. So right now we're working on a plan to do the review of all of our current trees that are nominated that the city's still under management for maintaining, and getting a maintenance program going so we can start looking at our funding that needs in the future. So today's nomination that we have for you is at the McLean House. It is a giant sequoia. It's estimated to be 80 plus years old. And what we're hoping to do is, I'm hoping to refine that by being able to look at historical photos. And I haven't been able to do that yet, but it is known to be planted by the McLean family, is what the documentation we're able to find. in future, what I'm hoping to do when we get trees, that we'll be able to do some research ourselves based on what the information that we were given from the property owner, but then also tap into the Westland Historical Society to see if they can help further that conversation and figure out more of the story of the tree. It's impressive. It's estimated 100 feet plus. We think it's probably more than that, but we're going to see if we can figure out more. Was able to measure that the spread of the crown by our city maps is 57 feet and the circumference around is 27 feet around the base of it. With the all the size and the information that we were given, it received a score of 450. It's out of that score. It's a multiplication. So we have to get to, it's not an out of, it's a, it has to get 180 points.
Oh.
And I should find out what the total is because it's multiplied. I don't know why it's multiplied, but that is how it's set up in the code. So that I need to figure that out. And so I wanted to bring this to you to see if you had any questions, if this should be a future heritage tree that I should take to council for recommendation. This tree luckily is in park property, so it'll be managed and overseen by our department. So that's why we can present it. And we have the ongoing maintenance of it. It is a really healthy tree. There is another sequoia on the property as well. But we'll be looking, it'll be interesting to see if it is over time, you know, do the research. It could be a centennial tree as well, but we just don't have that data right now. So
I believe this is a new process for us. And what is your guidance as
far as
what we need to do? Do we need to go visit the tree? Do we make an advisory based on the data and pictures you provided? I'm happy with your
So I've only had experience doing this elsewhere before, so I'm kind of mimicking what I've known in the past. It normally has just gone to council, and to me there's no reason why we would not vet this here first. There could be, and there's also times where you could have multiple trees and some don't meet nearly as high of a criteria, and there might have to be a decision that we can make a recommendation. But what my suggestion would be for this tree, as it's well known by the city and by our department, the McLean House property is maintained on a regular basis by our friends of the McLean House of the garden of the park itself. Definitely could go visit it, but we have no worries or qualms about designating this tree. My ask would be, and you don't have to do this today if you would like to, you could go take a look at it, but I think just asking for your recommendation of endorsement to move forward with council's great. If there is concern and people want to go look at it, you're more than welcome to. I don't have it currently on council agenda. I wanted to see what you thought all today before I put it on for December's agenda sometime, but I can always push it to January.
I'd like to recommend to the board that we have a process that if it's a questionable score, that we must look, check it out ourselves. But with a score of 450 above the 180 threshold, I personally would feel comfortable making a motion to advise adopting this as a, or recognizing this as a heritage tree. But it's really two decisions here. The first being, what is our process? I'd like to suggest if it's a close score to the threshold, that we have a secondary review, but if it's significantly above the threshold, that we can vote on it as a count, as a advisory board. What do you guys think about that as a recognized process?
Can I add a caveat to that? Absolutely. Which is, so as I'm working my way through this too, I would think the good method for moving forward, especially on a, I mean, moving forward, is that we have not the typical arborist report, but there should be narrative that goes along with the tree that explains, because that's where the ISA portion comes into to play. That's their expertise of it, what is the longevity of the tree? What do they see if there's deep impacts where it's an oak, but it's had severe ice storm damage? Like, that person who is an ISA arborist would be able to give that evaluation and recommendation. We get the application, we may come to you and say, we don't recommend this tree. Do you know what I mean? We may say, absolutely, it doesn't, not only does it meet, it may barely just meet the code, the 180 points, but there's some concerns about it. For example, a walnut tree are very susceptible to 1,000 cankers. So that we do have one in our in our current list. There was a desire to maybe do, from a parks perspective, to do one at the large walnut at the adult community center. But we are concerned that the long term, this liability is not going to be as great as something as like a white oak or some, you know, other tree. So, you know, from our department, we are not going to be recommending that we designate that tree at the adult community center. But also there could be some very high significance to that tree. Say it has a history that we didn't realize, and we could bring that forward with all of those. But I feel like that as far as the health and what the health of the tree, that should probably be deemed by the arborist. The significance, historical significance, could be an interesting piece to be able to give more of that information and find out if that's where there could be a yay or nay. I mean, there's a yay or nay anyway, but I'm just actually literally thinking through this process as I was going through this the last few weeks of making this. The nomination form's been updated, has gone through legal review, looking at that we actually have a sheet that the arborist is filling out that's with the scoring criteria. So we have it literally for them to be able to document with this, because when I pull up right now, there's just a form and it doesn't show the date that it was adopted by council. It doesn't show, it shows a few pictures, but we're missing all that detailed information. So now you can go back to, I just want to make sure to let you know some of the other things I was thinking that are missing from this, that moving forward, there needs to be more information provided to you.
So I'm going to toss out as a starting point. If the threshold is given, the threshold is 180, a score of 180, I think our criteria should be 3 points. One, that the staff is recommending. Two, that there is a review of the historical significance at our board level. And three, if the score is, I just arbitrarily picked, over 250, and the other two conditions are met, we go ahead and proceed with the recommendation. If it's under 250, in other words, it's just, you know, slightly over the threshold, that we may ask for some additional review. And if this criteria is met, we'll make the recommendation to City Council so that City Council doesn't have to vet all this information. What do you guys think of that?
So this question, so if it scores above 250 and meets that, we automatically are saying yes to it.
Well, I think as criteria.
We would still vote on it. I'm just trying to make sure.
Vote on it. I mean, we vote. I make a motion.
Right, right. And so
based on this criteria being met.
So the general understanding is that if it's a 250, we're likely going to do it. Unless there's some weird thing to it, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. I just don't want to lose the voting option.
I think
I agree. We
would vote anytime. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, this is just our criteria that would perfect lead us to
a recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, always.
And what I think was going to happen, you guys, I think as we go through these, as we get more, we'll probably still get fine tuned. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what if it scores really high, but it's owned by ODOT? We have to get their, you know, well, we wouldn't probably get their signature, that, you know, in a time, but you know, you never, there might be caveats to where it may not, you know,
yeah.
That was the only one I could come up with. That's not really fair to ODOT, just a matter of their timelines.
Well,
we'll improve this. And then I'm expecting that even on our process, we'll be fine tuned and improved.
I
like this.
I think that, you know, for the staff to bring us a recommendation, I would count on you to do the ownership criteria. Yep. Let's take a look at the score.
Yep.
Let's listen to what staff has to say on ownership criteria. And we review the historical significance. We vote on whether to pass it so that it should be an easy.
Tyler, you can stop sharing.
Yeah, thank you. You know, Council has to optimize their use of time.
Absolutely.
Relying on their subject matter experts.
Yeah. And then what I can do when the when I do the staff report to go to council, that'll have the information in it, then I can write in there that PRAB is recommending this approval.
So I am pulling up our advisory log, and I am Today's date is the 11th. 2/6 and.
Actually, today's is 13th.
Yeah, 11/13/2/6. Yeah.
2/5.
I've been doing.
No, you're so.
I'm already. I've been in 2/6 late today.
We need to ask if they have any comments too.
This would be the kind of.
Draft something up that has our process and our recommendation and while we talk about our next item and then I can do it now and we can vote on it, or I can play with the wording and then vote on it, come back to it.
Vicky, Vicky, do we have a quorum?
Yes.
I'm trying to see. There's you, John.
There we have 5 people.
Yes, okay.
And yeah, and also if you consider there might be 2 motions, one for the recommendation and then one for the process. Am I thinking of that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I think Councillor Bonington had something.
Oh, yep. I was going to ask you if that's something that would just go up and said.
Probably. It may. Usually it's nice to have, I have no idea. Yep. Usually it's nice to have a presentation too to show up, but you guys can just.
I never get to decide. Thank
Councillor Councillor Bonington's here too. I don't see him.
What up?
He's behind us.
I'm sitting far away so I don't get anyone ill.
He's a little under the weather, so he's protecting us, so he's sitting behind me.
Boy, Chris and I are happy. We're unwebbed.
I'd like to suggest that we listen and hear the city council update and then come back to the vote on advisories.
Okay. Well, hello, everyone. So on the matters that you guys would be interested in, we have not had really any further discussion about the tugboat. No movement there. still not really.
Can you speak up a little bit, Kevin?
Yeah, sorry. I'm not used to using these. Yeah, so with Oppenlander, still not much movement there. We are convening for our second financial needs and budget stabilization discussion on Monday morning. As I had kind of predicted, the first one was really us getting on the same page about a lot of things. This one will be a lot more interesting. It's going to be pairing the priorities that we have and the things we know need to be funded with potential funding sources. I don't have a copy of it in front of me, but I know my major staffing priority is getting some help for the Parks Department. That comes before anything else on our staffing priorities for me. As far as whether Oppenlander or any other park acquisition ends up on there, I couldn't say for sure that it would be lumped into one bigger category and not necessarily targeted at just one property. So it becomes a broader discussion than are we going to keep going after this one property? I will have probably a lot more interesting information about how that's going to proceed. If it's going to be all fees, all grants, all levies, how it'll work. But I was pretty shocked to see that the school district bond passed. And I think that says a lot about what the opportunities and odds are for a much more modest ask in this climate are. So if anyone has any concerns or questions, I would love to hear those as well. Maybe address them or look into them for you.
I applaud that to your support of Parks and Rec. And I think as requests come along, even if they've been in the pipeline for a long time, we really need to be questioning if we should spend any money that is not actually in some of our strategic plan. So, you know, using some real good critical thinking to even if something's in the pipeline, it's like, yeah, yes, we'd love to do this, but to, you know, be good critical thinkers. And again, your ongoing support, recognizing the needs of staffing for Parks and Rec, for our community, we always applaud that. Board, is there anything else that you would like to say about or ask about our counselors' input tonight?
Nothing from me.
Thank you.
All right, great. Well, thanks.
To being here, we feel better. Bless you.
Just the, the thought of you not feeling good makes me sneeze.
That was nice of them.
I'm still working on this. Do you want to start with your department and projects update?
Sure. I am currently working on getting information together, I'm working a lot on trying to get the tree code information updated on the website. Tyler's helping me with forms. Again, as you're seeing, like, just there hasn't been necessarily a lot of process. So working on, like I just mentioned, with the scoring from the arborist, having a form so we can keep records on it. I'm also currently working with a playground company to evaluate the long-term replacement costs of our playgrounds, which is basic with what they are and then improvements for those. So I can start looking at a deferred maintenance plan for our properties because I don't have one currently. Also be working on our turf replacement. Getting some costs for potentially if, as we've talked before about if the council wants to move forward with a community gathering space at Tanner, looking at some of those potential costs. So as they're talking about budget on Monday and looking to maybe go for something larger in the future to do improvements and ongoing maintenance, what would that look like? Could there be, you know, an inclusive playground over at Tanner once that needs to be replaced? And we have a parking lot in that shelter area that we talked about using for a large pavilion. So gathering some of those numbers, but really trying to look at our long-term ongoing costs for deferred maintenance and what positions as council's looking to what we would need to help support our department. Been ongoing. We've given them a list. I just did an update. I'm looking for would really be able to utilize a management analyst / project manager. It wouldn't even just benefit our department, but facilities when you have one person who's managing the contracts with myself as they're doing the repairs of the walls and getting the carpets cleaned and stuff, we really could be using that bandwidth. So I've been really, really thankful for council support and looking at what our options are. So yeah, a lot of long range planning is what I'm working on. We just had a really great meal at the Adult Community Center. It was nice to see the leadership team come over there and again, get to brag about how impressive that activity is. Tyler will have some information on it here shortly. But I got to 30% design on the non-motorized boat launch. I went through our land use meeting on that. It's the designs that you had already seen, but now working to figure out what is our move to get to 100% design and move forward with actual construction of what that might be. So I'll be presenting that. That's part going to be part of council's discussion on Monday. And then looking to see, we have funding with Marine Board potential that I'm going to be applying for Metro local share dollars that would be able to help fund that. But I also, I think I mentioned that I had it constructed in three phases because the cost of, we need to do the boat ramp that goes into the water needs to be ripped out and replaced. That's our number one priority. Number two is creating staircase down where people can take with their boats right now, where they're kind of winding down that dirt pathway. And the three, the non-motorized boat launch part, that would be the third one. So it gave us some funding flexibility based on what funds were available. So I just need to get some guidance with council to move forward to that 100% and where my funding will be coming for that. So trying to think of what else is going on. It's been a lot. And I think that's kind of my update for now. Still reviewing the remainder of the bond projects as well. There's only a few lingering, but I'll be doing some outreach once I get through this tree work to be able to look at Willamette and how we're adjusting some of the funds that were set to projects that couldn't be completed there based on just the ability of them not being completed. So like the one that was the swimming hole area and the bridge that, or the pathway that takes you over to Willamette as that project begins, or Willamette over to the Historic City Hall, as that starts to flush out more, there will be more opportunity to have those projects completed. So they're not just, they're not going off the radar. They just are not being able to be funded right now. So, yeah. Does anybody have any questions? That was a little bit of a rambling. I don't think I took a breath in between that. Chris or Stacy, any questions? Okay. All right. Anybody else? Well, I think that leads over to our events and recreation updates. And Tyler, would you like to introduce yourself and just give a little bit of how you got here, how long you've been here?
Yeah, I'm Tyler Harmon. I'm a recreation coordinator for Parks and Recreation. I currently am leading and the lead for our contract instructors with our adult programming, ages 18 and up. And I also assist with special events and event logistics. And I'm also our in-house photographer. And I have been here with the city of Westland for a decent amount of time as a seasonal maintenance staff. And then I got hired on in the park maintenance side. And then I moved over to the recreation side roughly in 2021. So with our Parks and Recreation events, we have a lot of events that are going on right now. We have a volunteer event this weekend at parks. We have one at Willamette Park, one at Fields Bridge Park, and Maddox Woods, which is focusing on invasive species removal and planting native plants. We also, our Adult Community Center this weekend is having their Holiday Bazaar. It'll be held both Saturday and Sunday, November 15th and 16th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., where they'll have 40 local vendors with unique handcraft items. So go check it out.
When is that again?
It is this weekend, November 15th and the 16th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Can I add one thing in there real quick? The Arts and Culture Commission is going to be there hosting a drop-in craft activity for kids who show up. So it's going to be neat. It's neat synergy with our Arts and Culture Commission. So
thank you. Some other events are coming up. We're having our holiday tree lighting and community celebration on Friday, December 5th from 6 o'clock to 8 p.m. I'll be outside City Hall here. We're getting the tree ready where Santa will, currently. Santa will be there and he'll light the tree. And then families can take photos with Santa. There'll be hot cocoa and cookies and some caroling. So it'll be a great time. We also have our holiday parade coming up on Saturday, December 13th. The theme is a Jolly Gingerbread Jamboree. So it starts at 5 o'clock at Old Town Willamette, Historic Willamette Main Street. This will be a collaboration with both our department along with our Public Works Department and our Police Department to make sure that it goes all smoothly. So I really appreciate our involvement with them. As we are prepping for these events, we are also getting ready for our winter and spring 2026 activities guide, which is currently in progress. So we're already thinking about the rest of, 2026. Our registration for this, our guide, will begin on December 10th at 8 a.m. Families can register online for our new programs for next year. And currently we have Mini Hoopers youth basketball program that's going on. This is one of our biggest programs that we do, coordinated by my colleague Laura Meese. It is currently in progress. Right now, this is the second weekend of games coming up. We have 191 children in the program and 18 teams, with a total of 28 head coaches and assistant coaches who are volunteering their time to help put on this program. So we're really appreciative of that. Laura has mentioned that they are a great group of coaches this year, and she's really happy about that, which are, these Mini Hoopers program is basketball for ages kindergarten up to second grade, which is great to get those kids involved. So I don't know if I'm forgetting anything else.
You've done fabulous.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's all I have. Thank you.
I want to recognize for the whole board how impressive all of that work is. And given the size of our staff, it's really remarkable the impact you have on our community. It's really amazing. Mm-hmm. And the whole department deserves major kudos for that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I really appreciate that. Yeah.
Since you're here and you're not a regular participant,
yes.
Do you have any information or things that you think that the Parks Board needs to know or to be looking at as we go forward? Is there any way that we can better support you and your team as you do this excellent work?
I think you guys are doing a great job now supporting us. I think that, I don't necessarily have anything off the top of my head, though I do noticing in the meeting today that I very appreciate all the thoughtfulness you guys are coming with each and every decision that you guys make. I don't really have anything personally at the moment, but thank you for asking. I really appreciate that.
Well, you know that we always have community comments open, but it's really special for us to hear any comments, feedback, or reflections or observations from any of the members of the Parks and Rec staff. And we are always open to hearing any input that you have or direction.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
If I can add a little bit, just when you think about what we do, and also Tyler has the Adult Community Center brochure that's out to look at what they, so there in our department for just the recreation side, there are actually only three people that are full-time. So Tyler is one of those, Tara, and then Laura just became full-time. So when you think of that, you know, I'm split everywhere, but it's quite impressive. And then again, the Adult Community Center, you met with two people half-time put on the programming that they do. So I hope you take a look at that. So we're definitely trying to expand our offerings, but trying to do it, be very aware of staff time. And that's why we have this balance of doing contracted programmers versus in-house. But it's really neat that the balance, they serve multiple needs. And so it's really fun to, I'm really proud of the work they do. So very lucky to be a part of the team.
Thank you, Megan.
You're welcome, Tyler.
Awesome. Board, do you have any other questions or feedback for our staff representative, Tyler, tonight?
So when's the polar plunge?
The polar plunge is on the 3rd of January, so it won't be on New Year's Day. It'll be great this year. We're working with Special Olympics, and they'll be assisting us with our volunteers. There'll be a suggested donation for them. I'm blanking off on the dollar amount, but it's a suggested donation and goes to their, Special Olympics. So, great. Which is great to be working with them. We're super excited for all the help that we're going to be able to get for this. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'd like to suggest, I'm going to make a motion and see if you guys like this. Today's date regarding heritage tree review process. Parks and Rec Advisory Board has reviewed the process approving heritage trees. As the review body, Parks and Rec is advising the use of the following criteria to make an advisory for City Council for approving a heritage tree. The park staff are using a scoring rubric to score the nominated tree with a minimum score needed as 180. For Parks and Rec Advisory Board, our criteria to vote on the recommending will be based on 1, the staff recommendation based on the score and ownership, 2, a review of the historical significance, and 3, the score hitting the threshold. If the score is close to threshold between 180 to 250, we may request additional information or site visit. We hope that our diligence will help set up the City Council for effective decision-making regarding heritage trees.
Sounds great.
So seconded.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Vicky.
Then I'm still working on the wording here, but based on the Grand Sequoia tree at the McLean House has received a score of 450. The city already owns the tree and the land it's on. So staff is strongly recommending this tree for as a heritage tree. We are recommending that City Council adopt this tree, accept this tree as a heritage tree.
Sounds good.
I'm still working on the words, sorry.
I think that's great. Well, yeah.
I'll second that.
Okay.
Yeah. So do we need to make a motion to?
That's my motion.
Okay. So you made the motion. Okay. Got it.
Just got to read it out. Aye.
Okay. Oh my gosh, we have two advisories tonight.
I know.
And they're already in the advisory log.
I know. It's exciting. Thank you, guys.
I will take ownership for emailing this to city council members and John Williams.
And they don't have anything yet. So I need to get it on so I can give you the heads up when it's going to the be an agenda item and get the staff report to them. And then, does that sound good?
Do you want me to hold on this?
I would, because they don't, they won't know what you're talking about just yet.
Okay.
Because I came to you first.
Oh, well, that's so awesome.
Uh-huh.
So
I will, yeah, if you want to draft something up, then I can email you and email everybody to let them know when. It may not be till after our next meeting.
Okay.
So, but I will email you if it comes on before then, and then we can send that notice. Okay.
City council, you're going to have the Parks Board recommended after it's been recommended by the
Yeah.
Parks and Recreation staff. I mean, city council, that's a pretty easy vote. Considering some of the other stuff they have to do.
Yes.
The other thing, am I being too picky? I've been critical historically of decisions that are not based on any criteria. And I'm trying to be more disciplined with identifying the criteria so that they don't have to worry about.
Yeah.
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 We love what you do.
Yeah. Well, and that's, Vicki, it was the same. I'm the same way. That's why I put together that form of.
The rubric is excellent.
It's just like, and the code already had it, just had to put it down so we can, because when I'm going back to look at records, they're not complete. And so trying to, yeah.
I can't believe the record's not.
Well, and if you consider a different time, pen and paper, you know, if you look at the date of those trees, it was just a different time too. So trying to polish it up a little.
Okay.
And Tyler's helping me with all the forms. Thank you.
Are there any additional items of interest or feedback from Parks and Rec Advisory Board members?
Quick question on the Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer. I didn't mean to say that.
It happens often, don't we? The name's just so close.
Yeah.
Close.
On the survey.
Yeah.
Do you have results or?
So results have been put together. They haven't gone to council yet. I believe they're going tomorrow. So I wanted to share those with you once they have been made public. So no, but that's the goal. There was a little bit of delay of just getting that together. But Danielle, our communications manager, is putting that together. So that's some really good information to share. So yes, thank you. That will be coming to you before the next meeting.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I've been spending some time in Fieldsbridge and Willamette, and I just want to say how nice it is. Gosh, I love our parks. Just want to express, you know, I don't know about you, but my yard looks like a mess and our parks look awesome. I don't know how it's done. So
I will be glad to share that with them. They're actually having them collect some data of collecting leaves right now, because there's a lot of, you know, obviously it's leaf drop time. And you kind of always want the leaves to drop at one time because you don't have to keep going back, but at the same time when they get really wet. But something that I'm hoping to get a parks person to come to one of our meetings, but we're still, you know, you think that we're picking up every single leaf and we're not. We pick up the leaves that we have to keep lawns alive. Shrub beds can only take so much, but we do leave a lot of leaves, and there is the culture of leave the leaves to help support your invertebrate insects that they lay their leaves on. And so when you think about all the natural spaces that we have, and there's park areas that we do leave the leaves, it's something, it's just, again, that's part of the integrative pest management philosophy that we're working on. But it's kind of neat to see. So I did ask them to start to calculate how many loads of leaves they're taking out and composting, because it's just an interesting number. And so but they're all working together as a team to do it, so it's really pretty neat to see. So, and then also currently they're working on a list. Each person is designated to locations of parks that they take care of under their belt, and they are working on kind of their work plan list between now and April when everything opens up. So it's been a really fun time watching them kind of transition and work through it. So
wonderful. Thank you. So our next, as a meeting summary, we have two advisories. And our next meeting on December 11th is our end of year annual report. I would like to request that our Parks Advisory Board review our 2025 plan and come prepared to share their ideas on their reflections on our progress in this year, and come with any ideas moving forward. We actually, do we have any Parks Board member positions that are rotating?
No, we do not.
Wonderful. So, because usually we avoid making the plan until January when we get our new Parks Board members. It always feels a little inauthentic to do a year in review and then nobody talk about next year until January. So without any rotations, we don't have to be quite as picky about that. And I will either Megan or I will also send out last year's review so that you have that also to reflect on going into our discussion for the December meeting. Is that okay with everyone?
Sure.
Awesome. Yeah. If there's nothing else, Mr. Mann, you want to close our meeting?
Yeah, let's close the meeting.
At 6:56. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
We're going to stop recording.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.